not man, what is man, where would each marmon,
yep.
Where would each men, but this is about magazine on RTR.
And welcome to Mudditch Mag. My name is Jada Corona and I'll be hosting today. Jody, Nick and Jim are all out of the studio, but don't worry, you're all in good hands. I've got a pretty fun hour planned. Got a couple of interviews that I did, one with Graham Accurst, who has recently released his new novel, Borderland. It's his first book. The story follows a young Jonathan, city-born Indigenous teenager, and he's just trying to figure out who he really is. And then I have a lovely chat with Tamara Tucker, who is a Yamaji Noongar woman, and she's the owner and operator of Yalkarung Consulting. But before any of that, I'm going to head into a track by Wildfire Manwark. That was Mirage by the Wildfire Manwark. The Rostin family is an element thrashing guitar and riding on back troop and hunting on stone country in central western Arnhem. Victoria Rostin and his four sons and nephews make up the band Wildfire Manwark. How cool is that? That's a family band. Now, my name's Jada Crenna, if you missed out. We are on Mudditch Mag. Welcome, Kaya. Today, for the first part of this show, I've got Graham Accurst coming in. And he is a Menjin man and he's a leader of an Australian Indigenous and Studies and Creative Writing at UTS. He began his writing journey in a hospital bed in 2011. He read and started his journaling between treatments for epidemic Burkitt lymphoma. As a Fulbright scholar, Graham took his love for writing to New York City, where he studied for an MFA in fiction and Hunter College. He's a board member for the First Nations Australian and Writers Network and Vorna. Borderland is Graham's first novel, and I had the wonderful chance to speak to him. Here's that chat, and enjoy, everyone. Hello. And welcome. My name is Jada Corona and you're listening to RTR FM. I'm joined by Graham Accurst.
Hello.
Hello, how are ya?
Good. It's a real pleasure to be here.
I'm glad you can make it.
On Noongar country. Thank you.
Now, Graham, tell me, who's your mob and where are you from?
So my mob's the Kookamini of far northern Queensland. And I'm a academic in Indigenous Studies and Creative Writing on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation at the University of Technology, Sydney.
Amazing. So what brought you into that? What was your inspiration in starting that career?
When I was 28, I was diagnosed with endemic Burkitt's lymphoma, which is a lymphoma cancer that is prevalent in African children.
Wow.
And because of I had a slight genetic susceptibility because of my Indigenous heritage, I contracted it and spent about 10 months in hospital getting chemotherapy. And it was sort of during that period of time when I was faced with my own mortality that I began reading again for the first time in a very, very long time. And I began journaling my experiences of going through this sort of transformative part of my life. And through that process, I decided to enrol in a Bachelor of Creative Arts at the University of Queensland. And that's what really started my academic and my writing journey. Prior to that, I had an advanced diploma from the Aboriginal Centre for the Performing Arts, and I was playing a lot of music at the time. But it was really in the writing that I think I found my true calling as a creative.
Wow, amazing. So that's pretty intense.
Mm.
And do you think you suffered from it physically, emotionally, and how did you think you recovered from it all?
It was, the way that I tend to frame it, it was the worst and best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
I learned a lot about what I wanted to do with my life and the ways that I wanted to express aspects of my own identity, but also give back within the framework of literature, something meaningful where other Indigenous people could see themselves in the writing.
Mm.
So in the case of Borderland, I really tried to write a novel that I would have been excited by as a 15-year-old male Indigenous kid growing up in Mianjin.
Yeah, wow. So Borderland, it's your new release.
Yes.
Tell us about it. What is the story? What are you aiming for? And what is your end goal?
Sure. So Borderland tracks the journey of Jonathan, who is a young Indigenous man. He's in a private school called St. Lucia Private, and he finishes school there and joins a performing arts college, an Indigenous performing arts college, and gets a gig for a mining company to talk about expedited procedures or the exploration of country for community to have better informed decision making. He's followed by a sort of a malevolent dreaming figure which chases him towards his ancestral homeland and his identity. So my publisher and agent have framed it as an eco-thriller horror. And there's some complexities around that kind of interface between Indigenous stories and the market that we can discuss later. But for me, it was really a story about my own experiences growing up as an Indigenous young man. And when I was growing up, there were very few Indigenous stories for that kind of audience, for young adult audiences. But particularly for young adult male audiences, Indigenous male audiences. So I had an incredibly small and targeted audience for this book, which I think it can be read and enjoyed by everyone. But really, if young Indigenous men get something out of this novel, I think I've done my job.
Because there's a lot of stories out there for a lot of Indigenous people, but not so many directed about Indigenous men.
Yeah.
Yep. And do you think your book, you're really trying to, I guess, speak about a lot of different issues that a lot of Indigenous men go through?
Absolutely.
Going through school and private school especially can be super tough.
Yep, yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And for me, I wanted to show, gone are the days, I believe, where we've hit a new age where we value the intelligence of young readers. So for me, I wanted to write a novel that looked at issues around Indigenous identity and the extraction industry in mining, where we see multiple Indigenous viewpoints about issues around Indigenous identity and the extraction industry. So learning how to achieve that as a writer was probably my greatest sort of challenge, I would say. So the novel sort of came out of a process of trial and error, particularly at those foundational stages of my development as a creative writer and my creative practice. And the institution was incredibly helpful.
Mm.
But I think I've gone around your question.
You're all right.
ask away.
So with the writing of the book, I understand you were inspired by, you know, the events that have happened in your life. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're talking about mining quite a bit. So are you directing this to specific events that have happened which have involved mining issues?
So Jonathan's journey tracks my own particular journey through adolescence in Brisbane. I went to a private boys' school called Nadji College, which was predominantly white, and there were very few Indigenous students. And I also went to the Aboriginal Centre for Performing Arts. So I'm rendering those settings and the angst I felt as a young man in as an authentic way as I could and can. But also while I was at the Aboriginal Centre for Performing Arts, I got a gig with a mining company to actually go out and talk about expedited procedures and exploration of country.
So you really got that insight to it.
Absolutely, and it really was formative in the sense of, because I'd gone down the path that Jonathan goes down, to, and particularly in the rendering of setting, I was able to sort of render country as someone who'd been on it and had gone through the process of interfacing mining speak or bureaucratic speak with what is actually, you know, a rich cosmological tradition on country.
Mm.
And it was really the ways in which Indigenous young people have to navigate different spaces. So for me, going to a predominantly white private school and having the kinds of issues around where you fit in that space as a young person, and then again in the Indigenous performing arts space where I didn't know as much as some of my peers around my connection to country and community. So some Indigenous young people, they feel out as an outsider in both spaces.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think that often gets looked at enough in our fiction.
It definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's what a lot of Borderland talks about. Hey,
yeah.
A lot of the differences between white men and black men, or not even, like, just the differences overall between Indigenous men and women and white people.
That's right, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Graham, thank you so much for chatting. We're going to go for a quick song break and we'll keep chatting. You're listening to RTR FM and my name is Jada Corona. And we're back. Hello, my name is Jada Corona and you're listening to RTR FM. I'm joined by Graham, who's talking about his new story, Borderland. Hi, Graham.
Hello.
Now, we spoke earlier about the mining industry and your personal experiences with the book and how some of the storylines within it connect to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your process in writing the book? Did it take you years? Did it take you months? Or did you just one day wake up and go, I know what I want to write about?
Yeah, I mentioned before that Jonathan's story sort of tracks my own personal history, and I think that was really important. And we probably see that often in many debut novels where your personal experience is so linked to the content that you're grappling with in the book. But as far as process, I went through, you know, academic training in the field of creative writing. So the first words for this novel were produced in 2015 when I was a honours student at the University of Queensland in creative writing.
Wow.
And through that degree, I finished with about 15,000 words, you know, rough words, and then I doubled the length of that, got a publishing deal with a different publisher at the time, which eventually did not work out, and there were for various reasons, but particularly because I was so new to... This was the first manuscript that I've ever written.
Wow.
And the sort of complexities and the issues around voice, narrative drive, you know, characterization, plotting, all these sorts of things were still new to me, so I really cut my teeth on this book as far as... It took a long time to develop because it took me that long to understand the craft aspects of writing such a densely, symbolically packed piece of fiction.
Yeah, of course. Wow, that's pretty amazing. So you've put a lot of your heart into it and a lot of your own story.
Absolutely.
And is it a pretty emotional book?
Yes, I think there are elements of the novel that will pull at the reader's heartstrings.
Yeah.
I think a special relationship particularly is with Jonathan and his mother.
Yeah.
And that sort of is the foundation for the entire journey. His mother is his Indigenous side of the family, as it is my Indigenous side, and understanding his cultural heritage, she is the link to that cultural heritage.
Yeah.
And he's... They're a single parent family, so it has been just Jono and his mother throughout his entire life. So we see that sort of the depth of that relationship play out in the novel, and also we understand what it means for, you know, in this case, an Indigenous young man whose only connection to country really is from the matriarch of the family.
Yeah.
And sort of also craving that kind of... masculine energy and identity in his development as a person as well.
Yeah, of course. Now, you mentioned earlier that the genre of Borderland was a combination of what, like, earthy?
Yeah, eco...
Eco-thriller horror. Can you go in depth about that a little bit more, you reckon, without spoiling anything for anyone who hasn't read it yet?
Yeah, no problem. I didn't necessarily write the novel to be any of those things, but what I really wanted to do was write a story about a young man's journey towards country and identity in a way that was incredibly engaging for young readers. And I think the real test of this novel was trying to build a fictional, cosmological, mythological world that seemed authentic to the young reader and to Jonathan, that was intricately linked with that development of plot and journey towards country.
Mm.
So the mythological creature is chasing Jonathan towards his own identity and country, but it's also a symbol for the land crying out and fighting back against an extraction industry in the form of fracking, which is actually causing massive destruction to country.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this was such a lovely chat, and I'm so glad you can join us today on air. Now, my last question for the day is, if you have any words of inspiration to young black men out there who are wanting to get into an industry of writing like this, but they don't seem to have the passion for it or the funds or anything like that, do you have anything to say to them?
Yeah, I think any advice I give, it would be around understanding that reading is such an important part of a writer's journey. You are built off the back of other people's words, is something that I would say. So read widely, read deeply, follow your interests with reading. Read other great Indigenous authors, read whatever genre takes your interest, and begin to just, take it all in and let your subconscious do a lot of work. And I would also suggest starting off with short story as a form. Tackling novels as your first project, I think, is folly in many ways, just because of how complex and how long they take to write. I believe it's really important for young writers to have these small wins in the beginning, and that's by finishing pieces, be it poetry or really short stories or small essays, starting to build a portfolio of work that you're really happy with before you take that next step and big leap into a narrative that is, hundreds of pages of long and multiple characters and is juggling multiple symbols and et cetera. Yeah.
Amazing. I hope listeners out there, I hope you're really keen to read it. When is it on the shelves, or is it already out?
It's already out, out now.
Where can we get it?
Most bookstores will stock it, and also through the UWAP website.
Amazing. Well, get the book, read it, and then get in contact with us, and we'll let Graham what you all think. Thank you guys so much for listening to our chat today. My name's Jada Kurana. I just spoke with Graham Akhurst. Thank you so much for listening to RTR FM.
Thanks for having me.
What a sick chat. That was Cool Sounds with First Daughter. What a sick song. I just want to give a little shout out to everyone who's listening right now. And thank you, Madeline, from earlier. I really appreciate that. I got a wonderful call from Larry D. If you guys don't know Larry, the sickest DJ teacher ever. He is the best. I hope everyone enjoyed that chat with Graham. He was super lovely, and I'm really keen to see what else he's got coming up for the future. But don't worry, we'll definitely bring him back. Did you know on this day, in 1985, Uluru was handed back to its traditional owners? What a good day. It's not super sunny, but it's also not super cloudy outside. Let's have a bit of a look through the window. Oh, it's a bit cloudy still. Coming up next, I've got a chat with Tamara Tucker. Now, she, beautiful woman she is. I bumped into her at the Perth Royal Show, and she had a little stall, and it had all different types of toys. She is a Yamaji Noongar woman, and she's the owner of Yalkarang Consulting. It's a 100% Aboriginal-owned and operated company that promotes Aboriginal education programs and encourages positive Indigenous culture and history. Here's my chat with Tamara in just a moment. I've got Loving and Caring by the Ripple Band. Enjoy. Kurrun Consulting is a 100% Aboriginal-owned and operated company that promotes Aboriginal education programs and encourages positive Indigenous culture and history. I'm joined with Tamara Tucker, the owner of the company. Hi, Tamara.
Hiya. Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good to hear. Now, Tamara, tell me a bit about yourself. Who are you? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
So I am a Yamaji Noongar Yorga. My family are witty people. We always went through my grandmother's the maternal line. So we grew up knowing that we were Yamaji people. We're witty people from near out near Murrawar. But I have lived in Perth all my life, and so has my mum. And my grandmother came to Perth, Boorloo, when she was in school. So Perth's been my home.
Amazing.
Just found out that over the past few years through my journey that, yeah, we have connections to Noongar country through our grandfather. So it's really nice to be able to be on that journey. Yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Now, tell me a bit about Yalkurun Consulting. What is it and how did you get started?
Yeah, so Yalkurun in Noongar language means to blossom or to flower. And so I've worked in education for a little while now, and I just saw that there was just a little bit of a void in positively promoting culture for children. There were some spaces where I thought we could do better, or we could do some more promoting. So I have decided to create my own business, which has been quite a journey. We only started this year, but we've had some really great feedback and really good engagement from the Perth community, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal.
Yeah.
Basically, when I started, I just wanted to get out there and promote culture. So I've worked in a school, and I absolutely love my school and I love working with the children, but I just wanted to extend my reach and hopefully have a really good impact on some more people. So we have two kind of parts to our business. We have services and then we have products. So with our services, we go out and we can provide incursions, cultural awareness training, just some consultancy. I am a Noongar language teacher, so we also do classes for adults and children, and it's anyone, education, health, businesses big and small, we work with you guys and put together packages for how we can promote culture in the best way. And then with our products, we also do a line of a diverse range of culturally appropriate products, and they were mostly made because I did notice in a lot of schools, in a lot of education facilities where children are, all the dolls looked the same. There wasn't that kind of range. There wasn't the different hair colours, skin tones, eye colour. And so it's been really nice to be able to build this range of products that children can identify as being Aboriginal inspired, but they can still have something in common with those toys. So it's not just a range of, say, brown dolls. It is, we've got light skin, dark skin, we've got boys, we've got girls, and all of our clothes, all of our dolls have Aboriginal print clothing. And they're all handmade as well by another small business. So, yeah, it's been really awesome.
That sounds amazing. So your whole business is essentially to promote culture and to essentially encourage young people, not even young people, young, old, whatever, very wide range of people, to learn and educate themselves.
Absolutely. So what we try and do, and what I had noticed working in education, is that it was a lot of very sad and history-based content that was being taught to people. And I just, to me, that didn't sit well. And we had a lot of, I noticed a lot of children were thinking that Aboriginal people were in the past. They were a thing. There were Aboriginal people. These were the Dreamtime stories. And so our whole philosophy is just to positively promote culture. So it's none of that history-based. In our cultural awareness training, we do a very small amount on the history just to give people an understanding of the people and why Aboriginal people may do certain things or why they are the way that they are. But a lot of our programs actually just are there to promote culture. So it's 0 to 99. Anybody can be a part of our products or have our products or be a part of our consultancy, because it is just there to promote culture. It's to show you, and it all starts with language. Being that I am a language teacher, and I'm a language teacher, I do a lot of my stuff based around teaching language. But then it opens up those questions from a lot of people of why is this like this or why is that like that. So it gives them a platform to feel connected to something.
Yeah.
And then to go forward in their own learning and be able to engage in our program. So it's been really nice. I'll be honest, the audience in Perth has been so amazing. They've picked it up so well. There's children in daycares that are using these words regularly now. The feedback we've had is just beautiful. So it's definitely something that I've been really proud of being able to put together, and then really proud to be able to move forward with it.
That's so amazing. Well, Tamara, we're going to go for a little bit of a song break, but we'll come back in a moment and I'll chat to you some more, all right?
Perfect.
Too easy. My name is Jada Krana and you're listening to RTR FM. We're going to head to a track, but if you've missed out, don't worry. You could always listen back on the website at rtrfm.com.au. And we're back. Hi, Tamara. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, if you guys are missing out, shame on you. I'm chatting to Tamara Tucker, who is the owner of Yalkarun Consulting, which is an 100% Aboriginal-owned and operated company. They promote education with Indigenous language, using toys and dolls and wooden objects, and many more. Now, Tamara, what is your goal for this program?
I hope that that all of Perth will look to engage with us and start their journey or continue their journey, or if they believe that they're at a destination, perhaps restart a journey in terms of embedding culture. So my goal is just obviously to have everyone in Perth speaking Noongar language. That would be my huge goal, and at the moment I'm just working towards that one service at a time, and just trying to change the minds of people and trying to educate them and get them to Yalkarun, get them to blossom, because teaching the language that is mine and sharing that with people, that makes me Yalkarun, it makes me blossom, and it makes them blossom. But I just do hope that one day we would live in a city that speaks both English and Noongar.
Now, you spoke a bit earlier about some of the products that you produce. Can you tell me a bit more about some of the upcoming products that you have to release soon?
Absolutely. So our products at the moment consist of a range of dolls, so male and female, a range of baby dolls, male and female. We do some wooden puzzles. We do some posters. We also do some resources that you can use for like teaching. So some different wooden rainbows or some stacked rings. In the next few weeks, we have some posters. I've been working really hard on getting a range of posters with some voice recordings for people. We'll be doing, hopefully, expanding on our educational resources. So we work closely with individual organisations and they kind of make suggestions to us, and then we add that to our product lines, because we need to have the feedback at the grassroots level. So these people that are embedding culture and that are working with Aboriginal people, we use those people to be able to know what it is that where we're needed and what it is that we need to be able to provide to them. So hopefully our puzzles will expand a little bit, and our educational resources are definitely coming along. So we've already got 4 posters ready with the names of some different Noongar animals, and hopefully that will extend to a line of 20 posters with voice recordings.
Wow, that's so amazing.
There's lots of things I want to do with this. Not always enough time in the day.
Yeah, it's usually the case, hey? Now, can you talk to me a bit about the process of how you create your products?
So we get all of our dolls, I just get them online or in stores. I then I've reached out to a small business only because I haven't wanted anything to be kind of production line or buying offshore. I've tried to just buy Australian. So the clothing for the dolls is all handmade by another small business. I have a couple actually, one based here in Perth that I was purchasing off and a lady that was based in Queensland. We are actually looking to find someone who is Noongar and based on Noongar country that might be able to make the clothes for us. I do try and stay as close to home as possible, but sometimes it is hard to source things. So we have a lady in Queensland who makes most of our things, and everything is handmade, so it's individually made from her.
Fabulous. That is so amazing. So you really try and keep it within the community, and while keeping it in the community, you also want to branch out as much as possible.
Absolutely. We also like to stock any products that other small businesses, other Aboriginal businesses stock. So we currently stock a couple of like tumblers from a lady who lives on Noongar country. We also stock some notepads, things that complement education and dealing with people who are in education at the moment has been the focus. So like our notepads we've got and our tumblers, teachers love them. So we're trying to just collaborate with other people as well. Mm. I love sharing. I love working with other people. I think that, you know, rather than doing it alone, I'm much more prepared if I have other people with me, and I feel empowered by that. So if anyone does have any products or services that they would like to collaborate with, like I would love for the listeners to contact us as we're always looking for new people to work with.
Fabulous. Well, speaking of getting in contact with you, you've got a Facebook account. What is the name of that account?
We do. So we mostly are on Facebook and Instagram. Our name is Yolkurung Consulting, all one word, Yolkurung. Anything that we have, all of our contact details, all of our brochures are all on our socials. Our website is a bit hard to keep updated because everything is handmade. So we paint all the dolls ourselves and I paint all the puzzles myself and any toys that we're getting myself and my husband hand paint. So it is a bit hard to be updating the website, but it is super quick to just jump over to our socials and check out what we have available.
Fabulous. Well, on your Facebook, you recently posted about an Aboriginal education program and experiences for schools. You mentioned it a bit earlier, but can you break it down a little bit more? And what will a lot of these, programs include?
Yeah, so we go into schools and it's all based around Noongar language. We first work with the person engaging us. So a lot of the time it would be principals, leaders of the cultural committees, deputies. So school leaders who are just wanting to embed some more culture on a daily basis. So we come in, we kind of find out why. Why do you want us to come in? What is it that you want to learn? What is it that you want to talk about? Why do you want to talk about that? A lot of the time we find that people engage with us because we have to, we've got this, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And so for us, we like to just get them to stop and think about why and make it a genuine want for their school. So I've never had anyone call me, ask them why, and then them not call me back. Everyone has gone, oh, that's something I need to think about. So we work with the leadership. We find out what it is and then we'll come in and tailor a package for you. So we've had a couple of schools that their learning blocks were named after some birds or some animals. So we came in and we did a whole school rotation with them about teaching the kids how to say the words. And then we did a small art activity with them. So we like to use language to start the kids off. And then it gets them kind of thinking about questions, cultural questions. As you would know, you know, we don't just teach language as a culture. I think it's something that we do, that we live, just something that is. So for me, I obviously start with language, but then it turns into so much more during those sessions. Schools can book in for 40 minutes to an hour sessions, day rates, half daily rates. We like to pretty much just go in and just have it all positive and just show people that, you know, we have so much knowledge. So much information is so relevant to these children's lives at the moment. And, yeah, it's kind of what we've been able to do so far.
Having a program like this, what is the price range that it can lead up to? Because sometimes not a lot of people can actually afford it. So what is your limitation when it comes to money with this?
Yeah, so as I say, we work with the company. I myself have worked in education, and the budgets aren't huge. And trying to get people in that are from country and that have some have knowledge can usually is quite expensive. So for us, at the moment, we've got packages starting from $275 for a session, and that usually lasts anywhere from 30 to an hour, 30 minutes to an hour. We work with the company so that we are here to try and embed culture into every organisation possible. Some people have a very tight budget. Some places are not-for-profit. Some places are just charities that want to be involved. So we do have some community work that we do that we, you know, you could come along to different classes or that staff could access some information for free or for not a huge amount. Generally, though, our sessions start at $275 and... They last for about an hour.
Fabulous. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for chatting with us today, Tamara. I really appreciate it.
That's okay. Thank you so much for having me. I really love sharing my culture. I love that, you know, there is this want out there that the people are wanting culture in. There are leaders out there in our community that are just crying out for it. So it's really nice to have been accepted in the non-Aboriginal community so much, but also by the Aboriginal people. You know, we are trying to do what we can to share language. It's a current language that is in revival, so we're trying to bring it back. And the support that I've had from people, from individuals, from businesses has been amazing. So it's really nice to be able to share that.
That's so amazing. Thank you for joining us today on RTRFM, and hopefully we get to speak to you again soon.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Tamara. My name is Jada Kuruna, and that was Tamara Tucker. What a beautiful program. If you missed out, you can always restream on our website, rtrfm.com.au, and all of Yalkarung Consulting's information, I'll chuck it in the program. I hope you've all enjoyed the show today. My name's Jada Kuruna, and this is RTRFM. What a great chat with Tamara. She was so wonderful. I'm actually really excited to see what else she has going on. But if you guys get the chance, definitely go visit her website, Yalkarung Consulting. I'll chuck it on the website for you. But I'm going to sign off. We got 30 seconds until 12. We got Matt Parrott doing Out to Lunch. But enjoy this track while you can. My name's Jada Kruna, and this is Mudditch Mag. So tell me what you do. You gotta run.